Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
That is right. It is hour number two of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. We got Chris Young coming up 4:20. C-Note is in 20 minutes from right now, the Cowboys news of the evening. A terrific article written about Christian Park and the Cowboys defense today by Ted Wynn in The Athletic. We'll get to that here. It's time now, though, for a sports hodgepodge. The Chief.
The reigning champs have been put to bed. Myles Garrett is a Ram. What is this world we're living in? Right after this.
TJ Houshmandzadeh, could you just rate my guy here on a scale of 1 to 10?
You don't think it's rude what you just did?
Who's literally listening to this anyway? Is anyone listening?
Well, it is
guys?
The home of the Cowboys.
Well, no one, exactly.
We
no one's
thousands.
Listening.
I did a radio show when I first got here, and they told me I was fat.
The brisket sando, that is hard to beat.
LeVar, you want to get in on this?
I'm not in on that. Rude mother.
Ooh, he almost cussed.
Then they called me the Girthquake or some stupid.
I do like the Girthquake. That's a nice nickname.
Little shock jock stuff.
Well, if you missed it, the Browns have traded Defensive Player of the Year, Myles Garrett, local legend, to the Rams for Jared Verse, hell of a player, 2027 first-round pick, 2028 second-round pick, 2029 third-round pick. The Rams, the clear and obvious favorites in the NFL now, and we continue to await a potential A.J. Brown move from Filthy to the Patriots, but Myles Garrett and the Rams stealing the show today in the NFL. And a lot of people are already now trying to put in the request for Aaron Donald to unretire and join forces with Myles Garrett. I mean, we see videos of Aaron Donald working out like weekly.
He could still play.
If you have a football algorithm, yeah. I mean, he hung him up earlier than most would have expected or wanted. The face of defensive dominance in the NFL for a very long time, the idea of him coming back and playing next to Myles Garrett is pretty insane with what already is one hell of a defensive line there. But the rich get richer. F them picks. The Rams are unequivocally right now the top-tier organization in the NFL with the coaching, the way they team build, knowing when to be aggressive. But as you mentioned earlier, Walchuk, maybe the biggest thing is the way they're able to capitalize on the picks they do have. Mm-hmm. Okay, we move on from our first-round picks all the time, but, man, when we have a fourth-round pick, we're going to hit it out of the park. We have day two, day three picks. We're going to find a Puka Nacua. Like, they do an unbelievable job. And so now they are as in win-now mode as I can remember ever seeing an NFL team. Like, they are all in a way that you, even for the Rams or, like, an Eagles team, you don't usually see it this aggressive.
It might be since the Rams won the Super Bowl last time with the Ramsey and OBJ trades.
Mm, yeah. I mean, that was a hell of a team. And they put in Ndamukong Suh on top of that as well. Like, they did not relent. You know, Aaron Donald, 35 years old, wouldn't surprise me at all if he steps in here. But, you know, when you are dealing with a force like this inside your conference, I'm just like, I'm waiting for the Joneses to engage here. I'm now waiting for the Cowboys' answer, and I hope that's coming soon.
Now, I'm seeing from Elias Sports Bureau, they're dominant. First time since 1997 that any player won the NFL Defensive Player of the Year, then changed teams the next season. Wow. Walchuk, can you do me a favor and look up who was the DPOY in 1997? NFL DPOY in 1997. You're trying to get the trivia question. And we'll see. I don't think you're going to nail it seeing here.
Okay.
I'm seeing a defensive tackle. I just want you to confirm this for me. Not much of a household name. I'm sure Broadus would slap me over the head saying this, but it's not like here's a Reggie White, at least in terms of the name that I'm getting. But you're not used to seeing a guy who's been crowned. Okay, what is the name?
Dana Stubblefield.
Wow. Was the last reigning defensive player of the year to switch teams. He was a defensive tackle with 15 sacks for the 49ers.
Wow.
I'm going to have to do a little work on this fella. I didn't know exactly how dominant he was.
I remember Dana, but I did not remember him winning Defensive Player of the Year. That is pretty darn incredible. So he went from the 49ers to who is the team that he switched to?
That's a good question.
You don't have that?
Another question. I'm not
I'll figure that out. Don't
sure
worry.
About.
I can do. I'm sure I've got it. I've already got him up here. I can figure it out.
Dana Stubblefield was not considered a great player for a long time. There was a couple of seasons where it was him and this guy named Bryant Young who were their two defensive tackles. But
Hall of Famer.
Yeah, that time kind of – Dana Stubblefield made the Hall of Fame?
No, Byron Young did recently.
He? Yeah, so he went to the Raiders.
We got a mugshot the first
I'm sorry, he went to the Commanders first or the Redskins in 98, and then he ended up with the Raiders at the end of his career.
Well, we also had over the weekend, of course, the San Antonio Spurs advancing. And once again, congrats, Lucius. You nailed it. Did you put a little scratch on this, Lucius?
Nah, I didn't.
You just went with your
gut? Really didn't. Yeah, I just went with the gut, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seen it. Seen the matchup.
All right, so who should we take, Spurs and Knicks?
Chet. Spurs.
Okay.
Spurs. Maybe 5 or 6 games.
Ooh, so you don't think the Knicks really have much of a chance?
Knicks are going to come out hot game one.
Yeah.
And it's going to die by the end of the game.
They're nice and rested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how the Knicks can try and combat what it is, the presence of Wemby and what it did to the Thunder. Not only Chet, and we'll get to Chet, but also SGA and the rest of those guys. I know they were banged up with their guards and the Spurs with Harper and with Castle defensively, got to give a ton of credit to those guys. And when you start thinking about the Mavericks and what they need to do, like the size is going to matter here with the way Stephon
yes.
Castle and Dylan Harper are able to play their perimeter defensively. But SGA, it seemed like he changed the way he played. And I know it feels sort of anecdotal and just eye test. I don't have like the numbers to back it up, but it did not feel like he was playing the same game that he usually plays, particularly in Game 7. And he was fantastic.
He was,
for most of the game.
But then
the fourth quarter, it's like, dude, somebody's got to help me here.
And he seemed exhausted.
He was.
Like he just ran out of gas. And you're right. I mean, the supporting cast. Cason Wallace stepped up.
Cason Wallace did.
He had a big fourth quarter.
And he's not happy with his role now.
Well, I get that. I mean, hey, if you're going to go ahead and have that kind of night. And right, I mean, there's just too many mouths to feed there. Like, you're not going to start over Jalen Williams. I'm sorry.
No.
And that's why I'd love to, if there's any way to do that, if P.J. Washington is somebody that OKC would like, I'd love to get Cason Wallace back in a type of trade like that.
It just comes down to shots, and you need minutes. And in this league, you know, it could be the difference of $40 to $10 million. If you give me 35 minutes, then I can go out here and score 20 points per game. Now I'm going to get some, you know, bottom fishing team to think I'm the answer, and you know, give me generational wealth. Or I could sit here and back you up and make 10. And as much as I like winning, I need the hundreds of millions of dollars in income before I'm done. I think the thing with San Antonio is they're putting out the blueprint here for you. It's 6'5 to 6'7 guys who defend like crazy and shoot threes and are skilled. It's not that hard, you know? You don't have to find the star at 9, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Go get you a guy who's in really good shape, can shoot and defend, you know? And whether it's a 2-guard, a small forward, or a power forward, that's the sort of combination that's going to get the job done. And it's taken decades, but it's grinding. It's already ground out the stationary big man. Now it's setting its sights on the smaller guards.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what's so fascinating about this matchup now in the finals, the two faces of the franchises. You have Goliath and Wemby, and you have little David there with Jalen Brunson, and how he navigates this will be a ton of fun to watch, and we have all week to kind of break that down. But no one had a worse sports weekend individually, I would say, than Chet.
Yeah.
I mean, Chet was just getting all over the broadcast. I mean, they wouldn't stop hammering the Chet Holmgren drum of like, dude, you need to do something here. And it felt like he was, I mean, the insecurities of knowing how much better Wemby is at what you're supposed to be good at. And it's like, man, if Chet Holmgren was in a little bit of a different era, if Chet Holmgren was in his prime 10 years ago, he's doing some special things. But you have a guy in Wemby now who is everything that you are, but just 10X'd. And it renders Chet Holmgren useless. And he's getting ripped to shreds. You have to wonder what OKC does here moving forward. Here was Kendrick Perkins, Big Perk, giving it to Chet Holmgren.
Hey, Chet Holmgren. We're talking about a guy that was a first-time All-Star this year and made third-team All-NBA and was a complete no-show, not just in Game 7, throughout the course of this series. And Wimby straight up not only punked him, but he took his heart. He snatched his soul. Chet Holmgren was scared to compete. And now Sam Presti, he have real business decisions to make when it comes to Chet Holmgren. This is not an overreaction. This is facts. Wembanyama is not going anywhere. He's going to be here. With that being said, you got to find somebody that's going to be that dude, especially if you don't know, you know, at times injuries happen. We saw J-Dub being out. But you got to go find a guy like a Giannis Antetokounmpo that's going to come in and move the needle and be able to go toe-to-toe at some capacity with Wembanyama, because Chet Holmgren ain't in.
Credit to Perkins, who even though he fumbled through Wembanyama, he nailed Giannis.
Wembanyama is going to take his what?
Yeah, what? Just say Wemby.
Yeah, just Wemby. That's all you got to do.
Just Wemby it. You know, I think CA is somebody that I realized, okay, Wemby's probably the way to go. Because CA would also just say it a bunch of different ways. And I was, you know, it's funny. It's amazing.
I'd like to hear some of those clips.
I was like, I don't know if I trust myself even saying those words. Some of the things that I saw floated out is, do you get into the Giannis sweepstakes? Do you go Chet for Giannis? You know, is that something that maybe Oklahoma City gets into? They just have so many assets. And now you have two organizations, because you have Oklahoma City and Sam Presti is off of, you know, that San Antonio tree as well. So their way of team building is very similar. And I think it kind of goes back to Danny Ainge's philosophy in Boston. We're going to hoard as many draft picks as possible. And now you've got so many assets that now we've got an elite team, but we can still go out and basically do whatever the hell we want. Paying Chet Holmgren now does look like a bit of a foolish move, but maybe it's something that they could end up making into a benefit of them by shipping him out and getting another really core piece.
Yeah, because his 5-year, $240 million extension kicks in next season.
Ouch.
Chet Holmgren's does.
For 17 points and 8 rebounds a game. That's tough.
Unless you're playing Wemby, where it's exponentially worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is the guy that you got to go through now.
Yeah.
Like, that is...
That's tough.
That's what you have to do if you're OKC, and the guy that you have... I mean, I don't know. Is Chet going to go visit the monks now? Like, does it? what does he have in his back pocket to get himself right this offseason?
I've always thought he was soft. I mean, they went on the run last year and won a championship, so I gave him respect. But Chet's never really been a player that I think... I think he's always been a little overrated.
You know what I thought about watching that was how soft OKC just generally was. And usually for teams to become champions, they got to spend 5, 6, 8 years having these horrific moments in the playoffs, and they stay together as a team and they get better with time. But what happens is it builds up scar tissue, and they say, next time we're in this situation, we're all going to look each other in the eye and say, nobody turn into a P word right here, or we got a major problem. And they never went through that. They were just suddenly way better than everybody else, won the championship last year, didn't have to build up that scar tissue. So you put them back under adversity, and they turned into a young team without a rudder, look like a leaderless operation. And that's crazy considering how much success they've had, but they didn't go through the normal trials and tribulations that young basketball teams do.
No, you make a great point. I do think that clearly if you have legit bigs, that is your way to beat Oklahoma City. Because the last two postseason series they've lost, it was Wemby, obviously dominant, but then Lively and Gafford, who were both healthy and playing awesome basketball when the Mavericks beat them.
Yeah, that's another good point. You know, and I think they found out what the Knicks are about to find out, which is that Wemby can elevate. And the texts are on me for saying these Spurs players were top 5 picks, they're lottery picks, but they're not stars. You know, they're guys that were picked in the top 5 in bad drafts. You can find guys like this in the mid-teens, in the 20s, in free agency, because they're not going to be valued at the top. So I think it's a massive inefficiency to find these guys. You can go have your 22-point-per-game score that's 6'2" and can't defend a paper bag. That is actually going to actively weigh you down in your pursuit of championships. Give me as many of these role players as possible, and I need a couple of guys to handle the ball.
Yeah, and fortunately for the Spurs, they were able to collect a bunch of those top picks. before the NBA changed the rules on them, and now no team will be able to really be able to do exactly what it is that the Spurs have done. But the Wemby thing is the one in a billion that they were able to capitalize on that no team with a number one pick will get to do probably for an extremely long time. But yeah, what they have going right now, and they're the young team. I mean, they're the young team that hasn't really had to suffer for years in the postseason before. Yeah. Like they're kind of breaking the NBA tradition of what we know to be a championship team. It's usually two or three years of, oh, we were close, but oh, we had to kind of recalibrate. We had to get that scar tissue. And they're just kind of nuking that right now.
Yeah. I think the bar is lower. You know, the bar is lower than it's been in my lifetime for what it takes to win a championship. So these young teams that just have good matchups, the intangibles don't matter. The connectedness doesn't matter. It's who can shoot open shots, who can rebound. You know, and that's what the NBA wanted when they initiated this new salary cap structure in 2019. They decided they don't want dynasties.
Right.
They wanted to be possible to be rotating through. And you know, I think that model is fun for fans because like eight different teams have a chance to win a championship in this situation.
Well, it's going to be a long off season for Chet looking in that mirror. Yeah. Good luck.
Oh, big time. Yeah, and I mean, good luck trading him if they want to. It'd be hard to justify making a move for Chet and telling our fan base this guy's going to change our fortunes. We got the C note coming up next. Chris Young in 1 hour. We're back with Cowboys content here.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
On the Fan. Welcome back. It's the G-Bag Nation on 105 Through the Fan. Segments brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels are the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. Time for Cowboys news and OTA's day one today. It'll be open to reporters later in the week. We'll talk more Cowboys with you here in just a sec, but we have some breaking news. Eagles are moving A.J. Brown, the long-awaited trade. Here we are June 1st to the Patriots for a 2028 first and a 2027 fifth. So Roseman figured out a way to get his one, and that might be perfect, you know, if they're looking at rebuilding here in the next couple of years, which it definitely seems like their salary cap situation would set them up for, like the end of the run is coming. Maybe they'll be looking for a new quarterback by the time we get to 2028. That is going to be extra draft capital for them. So if I'm Philly, I don't mind at all having to wait a year to get the first, especially since New England looks so good again. And for the Patriots, Kayshon Booty and Josh Dobbs and A.J. Brown, Mac Hollins, Hunter Henry. You know, they added Elijah Vera Tucker, the guard from the Jets, who's good, and then Caleb Lomu to their offensive line in the draft. I don't know if he's going to start year one, but he very well could, considering he's behind Morgan Moses right now. So they continue to invest in their offense and give themselves a you know, decent shot of being one of the better teams in the AFC with this trade. But it's not even the top story in the NFL today, because before we took the air, it's Myles Garrett to the Rams. As first heard with the KNC masterpiece, Kevin and Corey broke this for you here this afternoon. So, you know, that one is a bit of a kick to the gut. And now, you know, I guess post June 1 trade season is going to become the second biggest deadline on the calendar. You have the mid-season trade deadline and then June 1 as these teams want to break up their cap hits. I don't know, maybe the NFL should change the rules, but it's also perfect for the NFL's engagement farm.
It is.
Mid-summer here or early summer to be getting this batch of news that absolutely carries the day. But anyway, all that to say, the Packers with Jonathan Gannon, the most reported offer for Josh Sweat right now, as he left Arizona as their head coach. He takes over as the Packers defensive coordinator, and it's maybe Josh Sweat and Jonathan Gannon are like a package deal.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, I was a little bit happy to see Matt Schneidman, who covers Green Bay, said that sorry to rain on the parade, but I'm told Brian Gutekunst has not discussed a Josh Sweat trade with anyone. It's not a thing at this point, but there is a lot of engagement on Green Bay Twitter right now that they are very interested in Josh Sweat. I just don't know salary cap-wise. I think they've only got $9 million in space. The Cowboys would probably be in a similar situation here if they wanted to get on this. But I think the Cowboys have more wiggle room than what Green Bay does to try and open space up.
So my understanding, it's 13 right now.
For Dallas, it is, yeah. For Dallas, yeah. So nine. So they I mean, Dallas could. I think 10 is really what you'd be looking at to try and add on a Josh Sweat. But we'll have to monitor that situation in Green Bay.
What do you think about the Eagles moving on from A.J. Brown? Does that bring him back to the pack a little bit here?
I think it does. I mean, A.J. Brown's been a hell of a player. Like, Devontae Smith is probably primed to break out, and Mekhi Lemon's a guy that I loved. I thought he was the number one wide receiver in this class with his ability to create natural separation. I mean, he's got a massive catch radius for even just being a 5'11 player. We'll just see if that matches up with Jalen Hurts. I tried to go a little bit more, you know, deep dive into him and throwing over the middle because we had that conversation last week. And when he does it, he statistically is very good at it. They just don't have him throw between the hashes much. So is that just because they're scared of it? Or is that their offense has just been really outside the numbers, and that's where A.J. Brown and you see Devontae Smith make a lot of those toe-tap type of catches that they've excelled at. So I do think you might see a little bit of a change with Eli Stowers, the tight end they drafted, and Mekhi Lemon. Maybe it is a little bit more intermediate and in middle of the field for Philly this year. But I'm a little bit bummed because you clearly had a rift between quarterback and wide receiver, and I like any type of drama that can be like an enemy from within for Philly. But as we were talking about during the break, I think Jalen Hurts is really the biggest problem for them.
You think they're still going to have to pull out the positivity bunny rabbit at some point this year?
Throw that
in the
shout
locker room.
Shout out to the Cowboys in their Tyler schedule video release. They were making fun of the bunny.
Heck yeah, they were.
Oh, it was so good.
That is a classic callback and hilarious that they employed that. I think whoever came up with that idea should have been fired.
I think it was Big Dom, and I think he got a raise for it.
One of the single worst sports decisions of all time.
Yeah, that's brutal.
Inflate a bunny rabbit in the middle of the locker room so guys can start to like each other again.
It's not even Easter.
But I agree with you. I think A.J. Brown was just a symptom of a bigger problem, which is we won the Super Bowl, we have these massive expectations, but our offensive line is deteriorating and our quarterback is limited.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real problem. And Brown was like unable to cope with the stress of that.
Yeah.
So he wanted to let everybody else know it's not my fault, you know? And I think as this picks up, sure, Mekhi Lemon and Eli Stowers could be so good that maybe they don't miss a beat and their passing game is that great. And it's a team that has proven really over the last 3 years that it can move through the toxicity and find a way to win. Maybe that's Nick Sirianni's natural environment. He doesn't mind it at all.
Because that's kind of how he is. I think that's probably how you go to a Christmas with the Sirianni's. It's much like the Christmas Fishes episode of The Bear. If you watch that show, it's one of the most stressful episodes of television you will ever see. They're all yelling at each other. There's forks being thrown. It's wild. I think maybe that's where Sirianni finds his comfort. But
Was that the chef?
Yes.
Show? Yeah.
Yes, Chef.
Cassandra was watching
tremendous,
that.
Tremendous show. And I think the final season's coming out at the end of the month. But, yeah, I mean, it's a great opportunity for Devontae Smith. I still think for Howie, I mean, it sucks. You know, you don't want to give praise to the Eagles. When you trade a 1 and a 3 for a receiver 4 years ago, and now you get back a 1 and a 5 for a guy that's now 30, it's overall a huge win for the Eagles. But for New England, you reunite a head coach and A.J. Brown, who clearly have a good rapport and relationship. Big reason why Mike Vrabel was so pissed to get out of Tennessee was because they moved him. He had a rift with the GM there, and they drastically needed playmakers. I mean, we saw that throughout their entire Super Bowl run and in the Super Bowl. Matt Collins was their top target in the Super Bowl. They had to get an outside weapon for Drake May, and they finally accomplished that.
Absolutely. 972 says, OKC won it all last year, was a couple of points away from trying to run it back the other day, and here y'all are today saying they should blow it up by trading Chet, LOL. That's Latrette from Dallas. It just comes down to the aprons of the luxury tax, and OKC is finding out what Boston found out, that you can't like compete, pay your role players, and pay your superstars at the same time unless you want to lose like $100 million. It's legitimately like the owner has to say, is it worth me losing potentially tens of millions of dollars? Or if we really suck and people stop watching us, over $100 million. That's what they got to risk to keep these great teams together. Only the Warriors were willing to do it. But yeah. Shortly thereafter, when they realized they weren't going to be champions again, they started parting that thing out and said, "Oh, we got to say goodbye to Klay Thompson. We just did this deal with Jordan Poole. You got to go." When the Warriors started that dynasty, it was crazy. The number of players, Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, like former lottery picks who had led their teams, are coming off the bench. Who was the big Australian big man from Utah? Andrew Bogut. Hey, here I am, Bogut. Yeah. You know, just out of nowhere. Like, so if you add players like that in today's NBA, not only do you have to give them the $10 million, but you got to give them an additional $30 million to revenue sharing, you know, once you're over that apron. So, you know, it really comes down to how much willing you're willing to risk losing a very significant amount of money. And that's one of the great advantages of having the Adelson family owning the Mavs now.
It's very true.
Yeah.
I'm with you. And look, I love you, Letret, but I'm talking about it because now you have new information, and that information is Victor Wembanyama. You know, this guy has arrived, and that is now probably going to be the team that you're going to have to go through if you want to get back to the finals. And clearly, their best player just punked your best player. And I don't think that's ever going to change. So it's not blowing it up. It's moving one guy that you can also then still get really good assets back for.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's a little bit of an overreaction there, Letret.
Yeah, yeah, that too. Like, Chet just isn't worth that money.
Yeah, I mean, if you can move him and go and get a Giannis or whoever it might be that they like out there, yeah, that's a chip that you can still continue to make your roster better.
Your best weapon is actually a more perimeter-oriented, really strong guy who's around 6'8", 6'9". Instead of going with a 7-footer who's going to try to out-lanky Wemby, that's not going to work.
Yeah,
you want to throw really solid, active guys at him to disrupt him and go with that Porzingis theory of we're just running little guys at you that make you nervous.
That's why it'll be interesting to see the Ananobi stuff. Ananobi with the Knicks versus Wemby.
Yeah.
He's had some success there.
Has he?
So that'll be, and they'll throw a multitude of guys at him, of course, but Ananobi will be one of those guys that's a different body type, physical as all hell. Like, I think that's what you're going to have to be with Wemby. You're going to have to be much stronger and be willing to just get nasty.
You could give us some amazing Karl Anthony Towns audio, though.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be off the charts.
Oh, my gosh. Huh. Oh, come on. Oh, stop it.
They're going to mic him up.
Man, Cat's going to be zesty in the series.
Okay, I really wanted to get to this Ted Wynn article, but it's clear we do not have time for that, and that's my fault. So I'm gonna own that, but we're going to get to it, I'm sure, at some point in this show or tomorrow's.
Oh, gosh
dang it.
I got to be accountable.
Oh, crap.
Okay, the good news is we have Krusty's Corner coming up, old Chuck. Where
are
you taking it?
Let's do it. I'm going to take us through and navigate a little bit of a mixed bag. Cowboys did make an addition. They've signed another wide receiver and one of the strangest and most obscure Guinness Book of World Records you'll ever hear.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
It's next in the nation.
Thank you very much, Lucius. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105 Through the Fan. Time for Krusty's Corner, brought to you by Greystone Roofing. Go to greystone-roofing.com. Here's Wolchuk for the
game. Hey, kids! Your old pal Krusty's going to teach you 5 new words.
You're not wrong about that.
From Dallas, Texas, number 55, Brian Waters.
Wow. We also have breaking news regarding the Mavericks' new arena, as Brad Townsend has put out after more than a year of analyzing Dallas sites for their planned multi-billion-dollar arena and entertainment district. The Mavericks have chosen Valley View, dealing a major setbacks to efforts to bring the project downtown. The Mavericks on Monday executed option agreements to purchase approximately 104 acres of the 110-acre former site of Valley View Mall. Mm. And it is a seismic decision that could reshape Dallas sports and entertainment landscape for decades, upending the city's NBA franchise from its 46-year epicenter by moving it and its games 13 miles to the north from urban to near suburbia.
So that's 635 of the toll, basically?
Yes. Not too far from here.
Yeah. I mean, that's within reason. You know, it's frustrating when a team gets moved out of your town, you know, to Arlington or Frisco or whatever. You're still like, okay, that's fine. It's just a little bit of a longer drive. I mean, still within city limits?
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge.
It's a beautiful downtown setup. I love it. I love where the AAC is located. I think I hate that we're getting the Mavs and the Stars separating, but I don't.
Yeah, it's not ideal.
It's not, you know.
Ideally, you'd stay down there in Victory Plaza for the next 150 years.
That'd have been awesome. But I do think, ultimately, when you get a new arena built, like, the excitement's going to be there. So, and Valley View, I'm with you, man. Not a bad spot.
Yeah, and it, you know, so many teams have to deal with it's going to a different state. Like, it's not going to be the Indiana Bears, but the Chicago Bears are going to play in Indiana. You know, that's just weird.
Instead, you're moving 20 minutes away. It's okay.
And you're probably going to get a bunch of amenities and better parking.
Big time.
This is probably going to be they'll probably pimp this thing out in a big way.
Yeah, especially with the Adelsons backing it. I mean, that thing's going to probably look absolutely gorgeous, state of the art for the Mavs' new arena. So that is the latest there with
Valley
View.
And the AAC will become the Wings, wing spot.
Yeah, and then I'm sure concert venue, and I don't know if we ever get any other teams that want to come here. Maybe we'll double up Dallas sports like L.A. and
let's get an indoor soccer team.
Indoor soccer
in
would be dope. Absolutely, bring the Dallas side gigs back. But that is official. Mavs are leaving the AAC in downtown Dallas. They're going to relocate to the Valley View site. And we're just waiting on the Stars to make it official that they'll be moving over towards where the old Wilbon Mall was in Plano. That is not official, but all the rumors are being speculated there. There's also growing speculation that Braden Burries may prefer Dallas than any other team. So there's a lot of connection with the Arizona Guard and the Dallas Mavericks as we get closer to the NBA draft. Okay, before we get into some Cowboys talk here in Krusty's Corner, shout out to Brian. We love you. We miss you. I stumbled upon this. I don't know if you guys are familiar with any of Big John and his famous Chinese food orders.
Big John.
His name is Big John. He is a former boxer. His son boxes now competitively as a heavyweight boxer, but he has gone viral. He's got a tagline, Bosh, that he says at the end of all of his videos.
Yes, you love this guy.
I love this
guy.
He's
dominant. No, he's a well-oiled machine. You sit him down at a Asian restaurant or something?
Yeah, Chinese food.
Chinese food, and this dude, he knows every, bam, bam, bam.
It's crazy.
One, two of these, three of these. How much, bang, bang. He's incredible.
If there's anybody you want to order with, it's Big John. So I guess he goes on an appearance with a local, I think it's a radio channel there, or just, you know, a YouTube show, whatever it is in England, and they bring somebody to represent the Guinness Book of World Records. And I guess he's going for the world record for most items ordered from any fast food takeout place. So here's Big John rattling it off. How many items do you think he can get to set this record?
Go. Egg fried rice, chicken fried rice, pork fried rice, special fried rice, Singapore fried rice, Singapore rice noodle, plain charming, chicken charming, pork charming, beef charming, chicken balls, prawn balls, pork balls, sweet and sour chicken, sweet and sour pork Hong Kong style, sweet and sour prawn, beef in black bean, chicken in black bean, pork in black bean, roast duck Chinese style, roast pork Chinese style, chicken Chinese style, crispy aromatic duck, seaweed, sesame prawn on toast, spicy pork, mixed hors d'oeuvres, chicken and sweet corn soup, chicken noodle soup, hot and sour soup, prawn crackers, chips, salt and chili chips, salt and chili chicken balls, salt and chili pork.
Wow. Wow.
He's out of breath.
He is out of breath.
Wow. That to me sounded very quick.
I feel like I might have done it just.
In your attempt today, you achieved 40 menu items in 30 seconds.
It's a solid record. You talk about my life being surreal. This has been one of the most surreal moments and one of the best moments. It's been an absolutely wonderful afternoon.
30 seconds, 40 menu items in 30 seconds.
I feel like any one of us could crush that record right now.
I don't know,
it's
man.
Just who can talk, who can memorize a menu it and is. Then just talk fast?
It is, yeah. It's. But gosh, he's got it just off the dome. It's unbelievable. I don't know if I could think of 40 menu items from any one individual place like that.
He does.
Maybe Chick-fil-A. I don't know if they even have 40.
He's generational, this guy.
Crazy.
This is what he's built for. This is what he's dedicated his life to. That was the moment.
Amazing. Shout out to Big John.
We just watched him get to the mountaintop.
That was the heights of glory right there. Okay, we also got more Texas Tech softball drama as Texas is up 4-0 right now on Tennessee.
What is going on with all this? We have like secret footage of a handshake line.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know what the deal is.
This is game two for Texas, right? So they won the first one to force the second one?
Yeah, so if Texas wins, they move on to the semifinal.
I think they played at 11. Tech has to beat Bama tonight at 6 and then at 8:30?
Yes. Tech's playing Bama next up. So this is in Tennessee beat Tech on Saturday. So that's how they're ending up playing Texas. But you had Texas Tech, and this is when they lose to Tennessee. Speaking of that game, Taylor Pannell, who was with the Vols. And again, this is we got another transfer. So it was Mia Williams, who is Jason Williams' daughter, was getting, you know, pelted with, you know, the softball. She was getting beaned. when it came to the Florida game. Got hit five times over the course of the series, and then that ends up being, you know, a little bit of a confrontation. Head coach gets ejected for Florida. They don't come out. They don't do the handshake line. It's drama.
It's called now, flicking the bean in the women's game. Mm-hmm. We'll check back to you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for that. I knew somebody was probably going to make some comments, so I was trying to tiptoe around the words. I didn't do well. I stepped right into it. But here was Taylor Pannell. Afterwards, she's talking at the podium, and she turns around. You'll see her leave, and she's yelling back at the Tennessee coaches. She says that her former coach at Tennessee, instead of just saying, you know, good job, good game, good game, good game, as they go through the lines, said, you made a mistake. Like, she made a mistake transferring from Tennessee to Texas Tech. Well, SportsCenter went ahead and did the slow-mo. They went ahead and reviewed all the footage. Here's what we found.
What did you say to Taylor Pannell in the handshake line after the game?
No, just good game. Like I say to every player, good game.
What did Karen say to you in the handshake line after the game?
Yeah, we were walking through the line just saying good game, and she said that I made a mistake instead of saying good game, which it's kind of crazy, like celebrate with your team, and I just think it's funny she's still thinking about it, but it's old news, whatever.
Our post-game cameras, we spot Shadow Weekly on the left. Number 6 in red is Pannell walking down the handshake line. There doesn't seem to be a reaction there. We're going to zoom in. You see Karen Weekly saying, good game. Not this person. The next one is Pannell. We do not see Weekly say anything different. There is no reaction from Pannell there. We move ahead a moment later. Weekly is well behind Pannell, still in the handshake line. You're going to see right here, Pannell reacts to something out on the field. Then she starts talking with her teammates. A moment later, Jerry Glasgow is shepherding the team back towards the dugout. He asks Pannell, did somebody say something? And Taylor does say something to Jerry Glasgow.
Okay. So it does not appear that Karen Weekly said anything in the handshake line. And Pannell must have reacted what I think was probably a teammate uttering something, and then she turns around. It's now like, what the hell did you say? Now we've got this. But
her rabbit ears were on and picked up something that was inaccurate.
Like she was kind of waiting to hear something.
Or she's just totally ball-sacking everyone, dude.
Maybe she was. Maybe she just won. And that's the thing if you're Texas Tech. Like, you don't want to just be in the news for everything now. It's like, guys, let's stop. I'm here for some of the drama.
You
but
tell him to class it up a little bit.
This was kind of unneeded. Now, her dad went on a rampage on social media. As Taylor Pannell's dad took to Twitter, said, at Karen Weekly was right that my kid did make a mistake, and that was to play for her. Then he went on Vol Nation, was rage-baiting them. Lost on the field, but Tech is winning in life. Living rent-free in a weak fan base's heads is the best feeling waking up this morning. Looks like I'm still winning. Please, tell me more about how much I bother you, because I'm loving all the attention from fake people. I mean, fake accounts. Then he took back to X and said, it's time for me to move on. It's been a great ride, and now it's time to count all the money my kid got.
Okay. All right. Well, I wonder how the coaches would feel about this. I definitely know, you know, coaches are recruiting the talent, but also recruiting the parents. You don't want any unnecessary drama. But I guess, you know, I wouldn't rule it out. You know, I think... For whatever reason, like when you get into the less big sports, things like this happen because they don't have the media training. And maybe that goes for the parents as well. Like, hey, we got to cool it. We don't want to be the top story. But when you got a guy like Cody Campbell sort of leading the way, you know, well, it's a troll heavy environment.
Tech football lean into the villain role. I think this is good. You know, everyone's talking about Tech more so than they ever have before. And a lot of it's because of like, well, you weren't really relevant. Now all of a sudden you've got this money, the NIL area, here you are. But good.
But
good for them.
You're still bringing a little brother syndrome into it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what you're saying.
100%.
Act like champions.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I think their football team should just lean into the villain. I think that this is okay. I like what Cody Campbell's doing, just kind of stewing it. Oh, my gosh, I'm looking up. I promise you some Cowboys content. We've only got just a couple minutes here. Okay. We really just pushed against it. Did I do a good Broadus?
Oh, that was a nice job.
Yeah, I tried.
With 90 seconds to go in this segment.
You know, just leave a little bit of Cowboys content for you.
One more thing here.
One more thing. Can I just say something real quick?
Let me just pay off on this tease.
Yeah, the Cowboys did sign former SMU wide receiver Romello Brinson, undrafted free agent, had 43 catches, 638 yards, 3 tutties last year for SMU. Jordan Hudson's already on the squad. I think he's got a good chance to maybe make this team. I'm a big Jordan Hudson fan. You have a massive lack of speed for Romello Brinson, but he'll get an opportunity in preseason rooting for him. And then Nick Harris has a good article out right now if you want to check it out. The biggest questions for the Cowboys as they begin OTAs. Phlegm fighting. I think number one that he's got for me is the left tackle battle. And I just want to see what are the rotations look like, because I think this is what it's all about, OTAs. Depth chart-wise, who's lining up where? Who's getting first-team reps? Is Guyton getting all of it? Are they putting Nate Thomas over there? Do they give Drew Shelton a chance? But I don't think, and Bobby's really been leading the charge on this. He was doing it during the draft show and on the morning show. I really think they're going to make Tyler Guyton earn this job. And I don't know that they have anybody that's capable of beating him out of that spot, but I want to see the competition, and I hope that makes Tyler Guyton better for it.
It would make sense that last year they were like, okay, year two, let's build this guy up. Let's go optimism and confidence, and you had some real cheerleading going on for Tyler Guyton last year on those tennis courts. Maybe they saw that actually maybe that made him less hungry, you know? So they're going to swing it back the other way to everybody say publicly, we don't know who the starting left tackle is. Make Tyler Guyton wake up.
Yep.
Because sometimes that embrace feels like security. And what you need to make the most of your opportunity is a little bit of insecurity. We got two down, two to go. Cy Young Show. Chris Young's going to join us coming up at 4:20. It's football fix time, Chief. Where are you taking us in the fix? Oh, no, that's Wolchuk.
Oh, hey, baby. Back to back.
You're the fixer, bro.
Woo! Needy wide receiver Giants are getting some help. Gridiron to the booth in 100 days until the season. What you need to know next.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.